of the Alex Jones Show. Nolan Schroyer filling in for Alex. We're about to be joined by Nick Sortor coming up here in 5 minutes. We want to encourage everybody to continue supporting us by shopping at thealexjonesstore.com, where we have some brand new products that just launched. We're very excited about that. We broke all that down for you last week. But yes, you can get up to 50% off when you subscribe to these products at thealexjonesstore.com. Up to 50% off, so you get auto ship, guaranteed in stock for you, and you support this transmission while getting a great health supplement at the best price. So that's happening right now at thealexjonesstore.com, and we appreciate the continued support there. But the new products, Power Plant and Ultimate Methyl Drive, available now, up to 50% off when you subscribe at thealexjonesstore.com. All right. We got some other wild stuff going on here. Let me just take a minute. So in Los Angeles, there was a concert or a rave, as they call it. I guess it's some sort of like electric dance music festival type of thing in Los Angeles. And they've got a bunch of pyrotechnics and a big show going on. And they fence it off, obviously. And then outside, what do you see? You see the decay. You see the homelessness and the drug addicts and the mentally deranged there right outside. By the way, the exact same type of imagery can be seen outside of multiple different sports venues, but most famously City Park in New York, where the New York Mets play. And I'm watching this video that's going viral, and I'm saying this is such an encapsulation of where America is at right now, spiritually and culturally. And there is always the best and the worst happening all the time, but I look at that and I think this is exactly where America's at spiritually, culturally, societally, because here you have this event and people inside and they're dancing and they're drinking and they're eating and they've got the pyrotechnic show going on and they've got the light shows going on and the music and everything else. And it's like, all right, you know, everything's great. This is fantastic. But then right on the other side of the wall is the total decay. Right on the other side of the wall is all of the poverty and the drug addiction and the homelessness and the mental derangement. But see, we block it all out with these gilded walls so that we pretend it doesn't exist. And that seems to be the story of America right now. And again, you can go to any major area, and a lot of these professional sports teams are now moving their stadiums out of the downtown areas because of this exact reason, the high crime, the homelessness, the drug addiction, the mental illness. So a lot of teams are moving out of the metropolitan areas to get away from that. But isn't that really where America is at in so many different ways? Here we are. Hey, we're inside this little area. Everything is great. We got our drinks. We got our food. We got our fun. Now, but we're hiding what's really going on behind these walls. We don't really want to see the decay of our country. We don't want to hear about it. We don't want to see it. So we put these walls up and then we do our little thing. But really, as we're doing our thing, the third world collapse of America is happening right in front of our eyes. You tear down those walls and you see the third world collapse of the United States of America. So you can only hide behind those walls with your fire shows and your fire dancers for so long, folks, before those walls come down. And the more we ignore it, the
our medical grade USP ultramethylene blue, exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1 month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at thealexjonesstore.com, become a subscriber, and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. TheAlexJonesStore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Me now on the Alex Jones Show is Nick Sordor, and he's running around the country, always on the ground covering breaking news. Looks like Nick, you finally get a chance to sit down and maybe just take a breather here. I know you're constantly traveling there. I've been focusing a lot of the show's time so far here into the third hour on the Epstein issue and the foreign policy issues. And so maybe we just start off getting your take on all of that, and maybe we ask you at the end of it is where you think the MAGA base is at. But, you know, as far as the Epstein debacle and now the foreign policy issues, where does Nick Sortor stand on all of this as kind of a voice of populist America in the field on X?
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, Owen. I think a lot of this stuff, when it first came out, I was down on the ground in Texas there during the floods, trying to focus on that in the beginning. And I didn't realize how bad this was being botched, this whole Epstein thing, until a couple of days afterward. It seems like they are, for whatever reason, don't get me wrong, I'm a huge Trump guy, have been since he came down the golden escalator. But this entire thing seems like an awful, awful PR operation gone wrong. And the fact that Pam Bondi, I know that President Trump is backing Pam Bondi, but I don't think there is any way at this point for Pam Bondi to fully regain the trust of the American people, let alone MAGA. I mean, she hasn't done anything. Nobody is being seen being put in handcuffs. I talk to people, as you were saying, when I travel all around the country talking to folks, and it's the same thing every time. People want to know where the arrests are, and Pam Bondi is not delivering. That was a campaign promise, a big campaign promise. And, you know, has anybody from the corrupt Biden regime been put in handcuffs at this point? No. So that's what it's really discouraging to people. And this was just the cherry on top, man. I can't imagine this could have been handled worse. Jeffrey Epstein himself could have handled the PR fallout better than Pam Bondi.
Well, and now it turns out that Bondi, and maybe Trump's keeping her around for this purpose, is just like the punching bag. You know, everybody's kind of agreed, okay, we're going to feel comfortable going after Bondi. Some people willing to go after Trump, some not comfortable with that. Some people are even lumping in Bongino and Patel into all of this. Some people are differentiating them from Bondi. But now it's like, yeah, okay, everybody agrees Bondi is the problem. And I guess I'll just say this momentarily here, and maybe you can chew on this too. But if Trump is keeping Bondi around strategically to be the punching bag for all of this negative press, okay. But then the question becomes, will Trump fire her and do a recess appointment of an attorney general that can actually get in there and get something done?
That would be the most beautiful outcome, Owen, is that somebody else be put in there during a the argument that I've been hearing a lot as well. Nobody else could get approved by the Senate. And I'm like, I don't even really care if they're approved by the Senate. That's what recess appointments are for. We could get somebody in there as a bulldog, even if it was temporary, and just go balls to the wall and start locking people up, and then we'll worry about running somebody through the Senate confirmation process. We have to take advantage of the cards we were given. The American people gave a mandate to start arresting people, start holding people accountable, especially from the corrupt Biden administration, who weaponized the DOJ against you and against a bunch of other patriots that finally got pardons, after a very long time and a lot of suffering. And, you know, but that was a campaign promise that was delivered. But we have to continue going further. You know, we voted for more. And I think Trump knows that. And I'm hoping that he's not being gatekept from this information to the point where, I don't know how much time President Trump himself spends on social media. I would say, you know, he's probably dictating his posts that are going to True Social, not reading the comment section, nothing like that. So the information that he has is being spoon-fed to him, and I don't know by who. So I don't think Trump is a bad actor here, but I think maybe there are some bad actors in his inner circle that need to be weeded out. Laura Loomer is saying that she's going to drop an expose on that entire thing over the next few days, and I'm hoping that she does. You know, when it comes to personnel decisions in the White House or people that are holdovers and such, she's done a really good job at weeding them out, and I'm hoping she can take that further.
Well, I think most have determined now, and maybe this is coming from people inside the White House that know what's going on, but now people are talking about Susie Wiles. I will say that there was a organic campaign push for people to start saying her name and saying, hey, she's the one gatekeeping things. And to specifically address what you just said, you know, how is Trump so bad at reading the room right now? Well, maybe that's because Susie Wiles is keeping what's really going on from him. Keep in mind, J.D. Vance is probably the most connected, I think culturally in tune with Trump's base. Well, he's in like Disney World or something. So he's not even with President Trump right now. Well, where is Susie Wiles? So if anybody would be in there saying, hey, President Trump, here's what's really going on, here's what people are really saying and thinking, it would be J.D. Vance. Well, he's not there. And so then it's Susie Wiles. Now, I don't know what Laura Loomer has planned. I have a feeling that Loomer is comfortable with Susie Wiles based off of former conversations that I've had with her. You know, now people are talking about Susie Wiles working with other members of the Trump administration and some Chinese communist-tied parties. So not just with some of these people that we've identified before as being tied into other people, but now it might be Susie Wiles, who we also know is tied in directly to Netanyahu and helped him get reelected. So we'll see how far Laura Loomer wants to go on all of this. If she doesn't mention Susie Wiles, I expect that's because she's friendly with Susie. But there's no doubt somebody is not giving Trump good information and maybe even is taking advantage of Trump and intentionally scuttling what was supposed to be the America First agenda. Do you see it differently?
No, I said, I don't know exactly who would be doing it. I don't know Susie Wiles. I don't know, you know, there's some lot of people in the inner rings of the administration that we don't even know who is pulling strings in the background. Not in like a Joe Biden sort of way, but we don't know who is you know, writing the posts for him, who is telling him, you know, what's on social media. You know, they've back in his first administration, it seemed like he was, you know, reading a lot of this stuff himself. He was seeing a lot of this stuff himself on social media, which actually brought a lot more influence into the inner circle from these people on social media. But, you know, right now, I think that's a problem. You know, Trump does react to pressure from social media at times, but it's sometimes days later and such, like people finally went to him and are like, oh, well, you know, maybe this isn't such a good idea. Maybe we should change course after all, because here's the feedback from it. And they pick and choose what gets to them. You know, I don't know. Look, there's a lot of people you can't trust on this Epstein information. There's a lot of people that come out and said, all right, you know what? I've been, you know, hammering this for years now under Joe Biden. And now President Trump says we need to stop talking about the Epstein files. So I'm going to shut up and stop talking about the Epstein files. That's not how you do this. That's not going to win people back over. It might win people over that are just blindly loyal to a person rather than the MAGA movement. But this is not going to go away, no matter how hard they push. And, you know, I think they're really underestimating that within the administration right now. And they're going to learn. You know, we're not going to shut up about it.
Well, I would advise Laura Loomer to look into Susie Wiles, Brian Lanza, Mercury Consulting, and Goshen Incorporated, if she's willing to go there. But let's move on from that, because you said something earlier that people don't really appreciate, and that's, you might call it boots on the ground intel, organic intel, but you literally go around the country, you talk to a bunch of people, you're on the scene. And I noticed that a lot of people tend to just live in their social media bubble or live in whatever political bubble they live in. And I just don't know if they don't have a social life or they just don't engage in political conversations or what. But I see a lot of people are really just missing out on this. I talk to people in my different social circles, and they're all saying the same thing. Where are the deep state arrests? Hey, why are we continuing the bad foreign policies of the neocons? Those are the two big things that I'm hearing. So it can't just be discounted with somebody that's stuck in a political bubble or a political loop or just really stuck in a DC propaganda cycle. That's what I get. When I talk to people out there that aren't even political people, they're all saying the same thing. Where are the deep state arrests, and why are we doing the neocon foreign policy? Are you getting similar responses?
That's exactly what I was saying. That's the, you know, like my, even my dad, for example, you know, he's just a guy from Kentucky that's a, you know, blue collar working class guy. And he even tells me that his friends say the same thing, but they're coming up in conversation. That is one of the biggest aspects of their conversations. They're talking about, you know, where are the arrests, especially deep state, especially corrupt Biden officials. None of that happened. That's what people were, you know, really, really excited about. That was one of the top issues on the campaign trail. And that seems to be something that's, you know, not really being delivered on. Is it because Pam Bondi is in over her head? Maybe. I think that's, you know, that fact that she's in over her head is true regardless of the facts of these cases. But, you know, there are too many people that are more interested in becoming social media influencers and talking heads on TV than actually doing the job. And people are starting to see that, especially with people like Pam Bondi again, that it's like a running joke at this point that is angering people more and more that she spends more time on TV, on Fox News in particular, than actually doing her job. And people are getting fed up with it. And you know, the counter argument that people will, that pundits will give, that pro-Bondi pundits will give, is like, oh, well, she's just doing her job to be transparent and such. No, she goes on TV and lies. What is transparent about that? That's not transparent. Over-promising, under-delivering. We're never going to forget about the fact she said the files were on her desk and that the releases that she gave to the influencers at the White House, which was a total setup, by the way. I was supposed to be there, and thankfully I wasn't. Because that was a trap that was set for these influencers to try to even on the front, Owen, I don't know if you saw this part, but it said the most transparent administration in human history.
And phase one.
These files that were, and phase one.
Yeah, phase two was we're going to bury it.
Right. It's like, you know, this was another one. I can go on for days and days and days about this botched PR operation where they attempted to steer the narrative by releasing these binders and saying, oh, we're doing it. This backfired in their face so badly that they had to move into cover-up mode.
Well, look, just on that momentarily, you know, I don't have to defend the individuals that got caught up in that, as you call it. It was an entrapment. It was all Bondi's thought, by the way. So I'm not here to defend them, and people can have issues with them or, you know, question, you know, whatever it is that they're involved in. Many of them, I will say this, I suppose in their defense, many, if not most of them, have come out and scolded Bondi for it. So you know, but obviously they're going to have to deal with that. I wasn't there. You weren't there. You know the behind-the-scenes stuff as well. But I just feel like at this point, I don't know if it, I mean, if you don't deliver something on the Epstein files, then I don't know if people will ever forgive or forget or if you can even bring back some of that trust. But here's a microcosm, because it all is the same issue, and it all leads back to the deep state arrest not happening. Here's a microcosm. About a month ago, when the ICE protests started happening and getting violent, we saw multiple statements from Pam Bondi and the FBI talking about how they're going to get to the bottom of this. They're going to find out the organizers and the funders, and they're going to put an end to this. And, of course, where does it end up? On Pam Bondi's desk. Well, what did they do? They arrested one guy who was distributing face masks, and then they arrest some street thugs that they catch, and that's fine. You arrest the street varmen. They never went after the fundraisers. They never went after the organizers. And so what did we just see in the last week? We saw ICE agents get rocks thrown at them, rocks thrown at their vehicles, guns fired at them, other projectiles and explosives lobbed at them. So why is this happening? It's because you didn't do it. It's because you didn't do the work, because you didn't stop the funders and you didn't stop the organizers. Now ICE agents are getting shot at. So it's like, that's just a microcosm, and it feeds into everything else. So because you didn't go after the deep state on issue, it's worse over here. Because you didn't go after the funders and organizers, now ICE agents are getting shot at. It's like, why don't they ever address the root of the problem? I guess that's our frustration. It's like they never go after the root of the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're talking about how the lack of arrest, you know, the overpromising and underdelivering, that does, you know, that's going to enable these people, make them feel like they're just, you know, they're not vulnerable to being arrested and such. It empowers them, especially out in California. You're talking about that. And, you know, on that issue, in this about how much more is this going to have to go? How much further is this going to be taken, you know, ICE officers being shot at and such, before we get serious and put the military on the ground during all of these ICE raids? The Marines aren't going to take that crap, okay? ICE only has so much manpower. It's time to get the military involved and put the military on these front lines and take care of these people. If you're shooting at an ICE officer, why are you leaving in anything but a body bag at this point, okay? I don't think that guy still has been caught. He is still out there free, roaming the streets, ready to do it again. You know, that was botched all by itself. And, you know, when these people see that they're under the arrest, and what is there to be afraid of? What is there to be afraid of?
Yeah, by the way, and I don't think it's the same individual, the FBI still has a wanted out for Benjamin Song, who is also connected to Antifa. I don't know if that's the same guy, but yeah, they're still looking for these guys. And again, because you didn't go after the root cause, you let the problem get worse. And now what are you going to do? Now you have to reconsider your entire law enforcement strategy on this. You know what? Quickly, to pivot real quick, though, people are kind of not knowing what really happened with the Texas floods, and I know that you were up there. People don't really understand how bad it was, but, you know, I would say, and I want to get your take because you were actually there, aside from the National Guard getting called out and the diving rescue team and those guys, which are legends, I mean, just legends for the work that they put in saving lives. But aside from that, the people that I'm talking to have had nothing but complaints. They've had nothing but complaints of the response. I even found out something extremely disturbing. I'll let you respond to this first. But what would you say from actually being there? What do the locals feel about the response? And what are things looking like for the flood victims in Texas right now?
Yeah, I think a lot of the complaints that I have heard have had to do with not receiving alerts. Not that alerts weren't sent out, because, you know, we do have proof that the alerts were sent out, but the lack of connectivity in that region, the lack of cell coverage and stuff, and those alerts not actually getting to the phones. That's a big complaint that has been levied out there amongst a lot of different people. So this is going to have to be addressed at some point. However, you know, the actual rescue operation itself, they had pre-deployed assets out there. They had National Guard, they had Texas Task Force 1, dive teams already deployed in that area 2 days prior, waiting for something like this to potentially happen. Now, nobody knew how bad it was going to actually be, which is why people are now talking about the potential for cloud seeding and whether or not that played a role in it. And that's a serious concern that I'm going to be looking into a lot this week to see if that played a role in this. You know, they tell us that doesn't happen. They're lying to us. It definitely happens. But whether or not it contributes to a disaster like this is something that the American people deserve to know. Don't let them let you stop talking about that, because even if it didn't have to do with this disaster, what other disasters could it have potentially played a role in? And right now, it's very, very unregulated, this practice of cloud seeding. You know, and that's a concern I'm hearing more and more. But, you know, you have to think about it, Owen. During the first days of this, especially the first day, you know, I was there on the ground and there are helicopters constantly flying overhead, but I couldn't see them because the cloud cover was so low and it was still raining. So the fact that they were able to actually bring in the Coast Guard and make over 850 rescues, hundreds of which were done by air, is pretty impressive, to be totally honest with you. Like, I've seen the response efforts in places like, for example, Western North Carolina, where nobody was there to be found. There were like state police were sent there and had no orders. They didn't know what to do. There was no organization. The National Guard wasn't activated for days in that situation. And hundreds of people lost their lives up in the hills. A lot of people even lost their lives to suicide because they were cut off from communications and nobody was coming to help them. So, you know, if you want to talk about a disaster response, a botched response, it would be what happened somewhere like Western North Carolina. I think with the cards that Texas was dealt with at this time and how they could react on the spot, given the circumstances and given the lack of connectivity, I think that they handled it fairly well.
Well, if you need any assistance in your investigation on the cloud seeding, I've done a lot of research into that. I've even talked to the CEO of Rainmaker, who is doing the cloud seeding there, so he can help you in that investigation, answer some of your questions, differentiate between private sector cloud seeding and then potential bigger government projects. But that's another follow-up for another day. What I heard mostly was, I don't think... First of all, I think the Trump administration is just so, it's basically just drowning in issues right now. So I'm not really surprised that they couldn't really prioritize Texas. I don't think they knew how bad it was. Again, the National Guard's swim rescue team did literally heroic work. Most of the complaints I'm hearing are from the local government. And then it turns out that some of the local emergency response crews, like the fire department, well, guess what? They were prioritizing diversity for the last couple of years, diversity. So there's a lot of similar stories with that. Now, this is one story that I heard, and I wonder how isolated this is or if you heard about it. So a large portion of that flood zone was literally cut off because all the bridges were out. And it turns out there was a private landowner who had a bridge that was usable and intact, called the local government and said, hey, we got a bridge here. You can start getting people out on this bridge, because they had all the bridges blocked and nobody could get out. They were stranded. And the local government said, no, we're not going to use that bridge. We're going to keep that just for us and not let the public use it. Did you hear any about that?
No, this is actually the first I'm hearing about this, Owen. The entire time that I was there on the ground, I never heard anything along those lines. I'm not saying that it's not correct, because, you know, it makes a lot of sense. A lot of those bridges are very low bridges. Like, they're not the type of bridges that you would think of when you're crossing a river. You know, they're bridges that are very susceptible to when the water rises, to, you know, going under the water or being very, very close to the water level. You know, it would make a lot of sense to me that there would only be like one or two bridges that may be able to be crossed. You know, when I was there, there was the only bridge that I could cross, legally anyway, was the Kerrville Bridge in downtown Kerrville, that's elevated enough. The rest of them had already been underwater and were severely damaged. I hope to God that story isn't true, because that would be absolutely infuriating. But I mean, you can see like how close that in that video that you're showing right here, how close that bridge was to the water, and at one point was underwater. Going back to like the DEI practice, the DEI hiring and stuff like that, you saw Austin's fire chief, who has a fantastic swift water rescue team inside of them, and their DEI fire chief saying, no, we're not going to send our highly trained swimmers down to Texas, even though they were down to Kerrville.
Nick, hold that thought. We're up against a break. And again, I was just talking to a bunch of locals. And it turns out, because I didn't even know this, Travis County, Austin, actually has some of the biggest budgets and biggest emergency response teams in the country. And for some reason, the local government was botching this whole job. Nick's order is my guess. We'll be right back.
When it comes to supplements, I am somebody that's like same way that I am with a Mac user. I'm incredible at using a computer. I have no idea how it works. And I understand the effects and benefits of supplements. I use them, but I have no idea how they work. So like with Methylene Blue, for example, I found that within 30 minutes of taking it, I have improved focus, improved short-term memory, improved energy. But if I take it late in the day, it doesn't interfere with my ability to sleep, which is very rare for something like this. I get a tingly feeling in my fingertips. It's almost like it's improving my circulation. My wife has chronic pain in her lower back because she's been a ballet instructor for many years. And when she takes it, it goes away for 48 hours. What is actually the science behind why this substance is so powerful?
Your wife, she has kind of unexplained chronic mild to moderate lower back pain, right? Yeah. There's no injury there. There's no systemic problem. It just, it aches, it hurts, right?
Right.
So our cells have something called the Hayflick limit, right? So your cells, over the course of your life, they divide again and again and again. And around like 48 divisions or something is the number, around 48 divisions, it's not that you become like a Cronenberg monster and you start getting like cancerous tumors all over you, but we as humans, as we get older, we develop these things called senescent cells. Now, normally, if we didn't live in like a plastic and chemical infested hell pit, we would have a normal amount, and our improved lifestyle and modern living should be able to propel us to be like, we should all be 100 years old. But why are we all dying? Why is our life expectancy dropping? It's very simple. We live in an environment that's like 4 or 5 packs of cigarettes a day, on top of everything that everyone else is doing. We all drink out of plastic. We're all around all these carcinogens and whatnot. Everything in our environment is toxic. What something like methylene blue does is it is a very potent antioxidant to such a degree that it actually goes into the cell and takes the first oxidative stress agent that's produced, O2 superoxide, and turns it into water.
Really?
What it does, it's an alternate way for electrons to be given to the cell. So if you have cellular damage, like these senescent cells that have built up over time, and you have these mitochondrial energy pathways that just don't work anymore because the system is dysfunctional, the methylene blue can come in and do the broken job and actually heal something that was never thought to have been able to be healed.
Amazing. So that explains why it can help with things like aches and pains. Obviously, do your own research.
Do your own research. We're talking about like in vivo, in cellular studies. This is just what it does to the cell.
And is this the same mechanism that results in things like feeling like you have more energy and focus? Is it all as a result of this one thing that it does?
Definitely a part of it. They have other effects too on other receptors. For example, methylene blue radically increases glucose uptake in the brain.
Okay.
So it makes you better and more efficient at using your sugar. We all know the brain uses like 25% of the calories in the body or something crazy.
They've done studies that chess masters burn like 5,000 calories in a day in a tournament because they're so focused on directing energy to their mind as they're thinking so critically that it's like almost like an Olympic athlete.
Well, think about this stuff. It operates in a very similar way. That's the real thing methylene blue does. I really believe in this product. A lot of people have bought our methylene blue. Our methylene blue is incredible. I take it personally. I was taking methylene blue about like 2 months before this all happened.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, awesome. Awesome. I want to come help with this because it's so cool.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, like, this is a solid product. Take this in the morning. A couple hours later, you'll experience the cognitive benefits of it.
Yeah. I've noticed that it helps with focus, short-term memory, things like that. Have you noticed that it helps you get through the day too?
Big time. I mean, when you're looking at energy, this is boosting your own innate processes and making them work like they should. This is a shockingly, statistically significant and effective metabolic compound that has been studied for almost 200 years. It's very powerful, very potent, and it's available. So you can get yours today.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want to stop tyranny? Well, so does he. Live from the InfoWars.com studios, it's Alex Jones. And now, your host, Owen Schroyer.
All right, Nick Sorter, my guest here, and we were finishing up our conversation about what's going on in the Texas floods. And so I wanted to let him finish up with that and then talk about the anniversary of the Butler, Pennsylvania assassination attempt. And then I don't know if he wants to. I don't know if he saw. He was busy in Texas. But some of the events that took place at the Turning Point events this weekend, which now Charlie Kirk is saying stop talking about Epstein today. But we can get to that, too, if he would like. Why don't you finish up your commentary on what you saw there in Texas, your final thoughts, and then we'll move on to the Butler situation.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most disturbing aspects of it, and I didn't even know if it was real at first. I was kind of doubting that it was real because it was so bizarre. Owen, you saw this statement, I guess, from the Austin fire chief, or not from the Austin fire chief, but from their lack of response and the lack of assistance down to they. The Swiftwater rescue crews wanted to deploy to Kerrville and the surrounding areas down there. And the fire and the DEI fire chief said no, which cost, you know, how many lives we don't know. But and the guy still has a job. So it really shows you how broken Austin in particular is there in Texas. And, you know, there were a lot of lot of other mutual aid that came in, a lot of other fire departments. But Austin having one of the best swift water rescue teams in the country refusing to deploy to help their fellow Texans just really it irks me to my core. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it reeks of what we saw with the Los Angeles wildfires and all the all the DEI commitment there. Yeah, it's amazing. Democrats love to prioritize diversity instead of effectiveness. I think that's the consistent story we see here.
Yeah, and apparently they didn't learn. They didn't learn from last year. They're going to continue to double, triple, quadruple down on it, no matter how many lives it costs. The same thing, like you're saying, happened in Los Angeles with the, you know, they insist on having DEI in every top position in the government out there in Los Angeles, including the fire department. And you saw there's no water in the fire hydrants, no water in the reservoirs. And, you know, that's thank you to that fire chief and the DEI mayor, who both of them ended up butting heads at the end of the day, and nothing has been fixed. There's still probably no water in the fire hydrants, and practically nobody has rebuilt out there. You've got Gavin Newsom prioritizing a $100 million low-income housing complex to be built in the Palisades, which, you know, started to fuel people up and think, hey, maybe this was actually a land grab. And even if it doesn't, it's like Maui, Owen, even if it doesn't start off as a land grab, it becomes a land grab at the end of the day. Don't think that's going to happen in Kerrville, but definitely in Los Angeles and Maui, where Maui is still just as destroyed as it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, and you know all about that. You were down there covering that for weeks, multiple times. All right, moving on to the anniversary of the Butler assassination attempt, which was yesterday. Here's some of the headlines from today or yesterday as well. Alarming report. Current Secret Service Director Sean Curran signed off on unacceptable security plan the day before Butler rally where Trump was nearly killed. Okay, well, that's concerning. By the way, Bongino expressed concerns over that decision before he became the FBI deputy director. Secret Service failed to discipline agent at heart of security failures in Butler, Pennsylvania. Agent warned 25 minutes before shooting that Thomas Crooks was on the roof with a rangefinder. So 25 minutes he was on the roof. Nobody punished for that. Tom Cotton speaking the obvious over the weekend, saying that mistakes were made that day on security. Oh, thank you, Tom. Thomas Matthew Crooks, five unanswered questions about would-be Trump assassin. Would-be Trump assassin Thomas Crooks remains an enigma. Secret Service could have stopped assassination attempt but didn't. And maybe we could talk about this, but now you have people that were, you know, originally doubting that any of it ever happened, calling it fake. Now that's once again a story. Oh, was Trump really even shot? Was the whole thing staged? I'm not saying that, but more people are talking about that again on the anniversary. So, okay, aside from all the headlines, though, Nick, the one thing remains the issue, which is how do we not have any answers? Are we really supposed to believe that this guy just acted alone?
You know, at this point, I don't know why we don't have any answers. I mean, we're a year later, we know, you know, more about, you know, you name it. Than, I mean, besides, the only thing we don't know more about is the Epstein situation than we know about Thomas Crooks. We hardly know anything about the other guy that tried to assassinate President Trump either. But going back to this story, you know, I keep hearing on the anniversary, I'm hearing clips of local counter-sniper teams and local police that saw him, you know, 10 minutes beforehand, wandering creepily around the building, suspiciously trying to radio in, couldn't get anybody from the Secret Service to take the call on the radio. And then you hear that they had intel 10 days before that this was a plan of action in Butler, Pennsylvania, and nothing was done about that. That wasn't related to anybody that was on the scene that day either. And, you know, you're like, more and more, the conspiracy theorists sound like they're right. Like, okay, yeah, it sounds like an inside job. I mean, how many mistakes can be a coincidence? You know, before you start saying, okay, yeah, maybe they didn't plant this guy, maybe they didn't hire this guy, but they knew this guy was going to do it, and they were willing and able to let it happen. That almost seems like one of the most likely scenarios at this point. And you were canceled and called a conspiracy theorist just a few months ago for saying anything along those lines. And what worries me is, you know, the question is, how much of this stuff was destroyed? How much evidence was destroyed under the previous administration to the point where we can't release anything new on this? What does the Trump administration actually know? I know Trump has been publicly calling for more information on this to be released. Is there a reason he, you know, did he get answers privately and now he knows, and so he, you know, doesn't want that to be released? The situation is so confusing. I don't know if Trump is being gatekept from this information, just like the public is, or if the information was destroyed, or if our intel agencies are still just as compromised as they were before, and really nothing has been done to weed out these bad actors.
You know, here's another story that's not getting much attention. How is Congress so ineffective? How is Congress so pathetic here? And, you know, I would say, if I'm just answering the question myself, I'd say, okay, well, Congress has too much to deal with, right? All right, they got all these other issues now, and so they just can't conclude anything. It's like we come here, we take the initial swipes, and then we have to move on to something else. But you remember, we all watched the Senate hearings and the House hearings in response to the assassination attempt. We all remember FBI leadership, Secret Service leadership at the time, saying, oh, we'll get those answers for you. We'll get those answers for you. We'll answer these things. We'll do follow-up hearings. There'll be more hearings. There'll be more information. None of that happened. Literally none of it happened. There were no answers given. There were no big follow-up hearings, and Congress totally dropped the ball. And so you start to remember that how pathetic Congress. You start to remember that, yeah, Congress really dropped the ball on this too. They could have forced a lot of these answers into the public, and they just refused to do it. They let the FBI, they let the Secret Service just walk away.
Well, you know, Owen, Congress is, they say they're too busy or whatever, but in reality, they're focused on what their next vacation is going to be. I mean, when you get 30 weeks of vacation per year, you know, you have a lot of options for destinations. So that seems to be the biggest concern. And people are totally fatigued with hearing members of Congress say things are going to happen. We're going to be doing this. We're going to be doing that. We're going to investigate the auto pen. We're going to investigate Biden's cognitive decline. And then all of a sudden they do all these hearings behind closed doors and the American people aren't allowed to know what goes on in them. It's a big circus. It's a big circus and people are freaking tired of it. You know, I see it under every time that I, you know, report the fact that, you know, a member of Congress puts out a statement and goes on TV and says that, okay, well, we're going to launch this investigation. We're going to launch this investigation. Everybody in the comment section is saying the same thing. You know, nobody's really excited about this stuff anymore because they know nothing comes out of it. I know nothing comes out of it. It's like it's a game and it's exhausting and people have no faith in our Congress at all. You see them all whining and crying about, you know, even some Republicans about, you know, DOGE going in and making huge cuts and doing oversight. And members of Congress are saying, oh, well, that's supposed to be our job. We do oversight. Well, you don't do it. You don't do it. Nobody trusts you to do it. You know, at the end of the day, I think look, I said this earlier about certain members of the administration like Pam Bondi, that they'd much rather be social media influencers than actually do their job. That's their biggest thing. They want a viral tweet. They want a segment from, you know, Fox News to go viral on X and everybody praise them and yeah. That's what a lot of them want. And that's what a lot of them get. But they don't actually do anything. And I don't know how we change that at this point. You know, besides just like eliminating everybody from Congress and starting over, I have very little faith that that is ever going to change at this point.
You mean like Nancy Mace, who I actually think is she's probably one of the better ones in Congress, honestly. It's not saying much, but I actually like, overall, I like Nancy Mace's work. You mean like Nancy Mace teasing nude photos?
Look, I mean, I'll just say this. That was the first congressional hearing I ever went to personally.
Oh, you were really excited, huh?
I figured out that if she was actually going to expose nudes in front of Congress, that C-SPAN wasn't going to cover it, so I had to be the guy to get it.
You were doing America's work. Doing the good work.
But anyway, it's like these things are just... And the reason that I've never been to congressional hearings before is because they're 90% of the time, they're a total waste of time. It's all, everybody, again, worried about getting sound bites and then not taking any further action on the issue. You know, there are certain members that will follow through with action and stuff, but, I mean, you could name them on one hand at this point. Everything else is just a show. And, you know, I know your audience realizes that. I'm preaching to the choir here at this point. So what's the next step? You know, that's what we've got to figure out. I'm tired of people like, you know, some of the, I'm going out on a limb here, but some of the endorsements that we get, like, why is Lindsey Graham being endorsed for re-election in South Carolina? You know, what's that all about? How are we ever going to get anything to change if we continue being told that we have to support people like Lady Graham? You know, I don't know. And if you go against that, you get called out. You get called, yo, you're not MAGA. You're whatever. You're against President Trump. No, it's like we have independent thoughts. We're allowed to have independent thoughts. And, you know, that is one of the biggest issues in our movement, is that everybody will try to, if you don't immediately fall in line and you have any sort of alternative opinion to what, you know, certain people are telling you to say, they try to ostracize you. They try to outcast you from the movement. And, you know, that's another thing that we're going to have to deal with, Owen. I know you've been on the receiving end of a lot of that BS recently.
Well, we could quickly address that. I mean, it's literally just like dogs running to the bull. Like, they hear Trump shake the feed bag, and it's just racing to the bull for Trump feed. And, I mean, you know, I don't do that. I'm not part of that game. Never going to be part of that game. But that's kind of what I view it as. It's just they act like dogs, so they're going to be treated like dogs. But, you know, my problem with it is, hey, look, make your own decision in life. You want to attach your hitch to MAGA and to Trump permanently, and that's what you're going to do for the next 4 years. Hey, fine, that's a you thing. You know, if you want to just, you know, bark whenever you're told to, and jump whenever you're told to, and sit whenever you want to be treated like a dog, that's fine. My problem is, what I'm seeing happening now is that I think the Trump administration has realized this. I think they've consciously made the decision, maybe even Trump himself, which the decision is, we're not going to be able to please real MAGA. We're not going to be able to please the real Trump base, the original Trump base from 2016. But you know what? We got all these people that are loyal like dogs that will do exactly what we want them to do. So let's just address everything for them, and then they'll clean up the waste for us. They'll clean up all the droppings that are left behind. So what I see happening is, it's actually hurting the MAGA movement. It's hurting the Trump populist coalition. And now they've seen that. So they're saying, oh, we're going to cater everything to this group over here, the brainwashed folks that are like the left, that just consume whatever they're told to. It's like they're not even trying to bring the coalition back. It's like they're not even trying to appease the original base from 2016. It's like they've moved on.
Yeah, well, that strategy is not going to work at the end of the day. It's really not. It's more and more people, especially when it comes to you saw a lot of the feedback that they were getting at. I was actually in the room for Tucker's speech there at Turning Point. I wanted to go into the room and I wanted to gauge the reaction to Tucker. And it was super warm until he mentioned that U.S. citizens shouldn't be allowed to serve in foreign militaries, which I didn't realize was controversial, right? And there were certain groups of people that were walking out, but the reason that they were so upset by it is because the room was backing Tucker, not, you know, foreign governments, which I feel like we're making a lot of progress on, you know, especially with the younger generation. They don't listen to Mark Levin. They don't listen to the propaganda. They're not afraid to speak out against these foreign nations that are trying to take advantage of us anymore. We're being, you know, super effective when it comes to that. And I'm really happy to see that. I know that made a lot of people uncomfortable. Certain people will say uncomfortable this weekend when he was doing that. But he hit the nail on the head, and people see it. People were engaged with his speech, and it was incredible to see in person. And I'm hoping for more of that. Tucker is really helping to start a more mainstream movement toward what is actually America first. And I know people have been trying to convince you that you're either anti-Semitic or whatever, you hate the Jews because you don't want to be involved in another foreign war, which is what Trump ran on. And luckily, we're not involved in another foreign war at this point, but there were so many people that were saying that if you don't support boots on the ground in Iran, that you are not MAGA, because it's very America first to take out to do regime change in a country that has no capability of even striking us. You know, it's very weird. You know, at the end of the day, if it weren't for our interest in this other Middle Eastern foreign nation, you know, if it wasn't for The amount of stuff that we've done for Israel over the past, would Iran even talk about us? Like, what am I missing here? Why does Iran hate us?
Well, see, you're asking the questions that you're not supposed to ask, and that's why you get attacked so vehemently when you ask these questions. But you know what? I'm actually glad. I was going to go there anyway. I didn't realize that you were actually there. But since you were, this makes it even more important, because we saw... So I guess what I'm asking you to do for the audience here is, for people that weren't there, all they get is the propaganda in the aftermath, right? So for the people that weren't there, all they can do is see the different clips and the different commentary and the different angles and perspectives responding to the clips of what Tucker said, or the debate between Dave Smith and I forget who Dave Smith was debating on the issue of Israel, but they just get to see the different clips and some cut out of context and then political commentary on it that might not have actually represented the crowd. So you were actually there. What was the response like? And I guess I would frame it like this. You've kind of already started to build the framework, but I guess I would frame it like this. An issue like foreign policy or directly Israel has always been a no-go zone on the right. I've always called, fighting anti-Semitism or supporting Israel, that's kind of like Black Lives Matter for the right. You just, this is our virtue signal. This is our social justice warrior. We stand with Israel. You know, that's always been the pitch to the right wing, and it's worked forever. But obviously it's fading now. It's not working now. And I think some of the evidence was present at the TPUSA event. But you were actually there. So cut through the propaganda, cut through the out of context clips. What was that actually like? What was being there and this new discussion really on the right going mainstream? What was all of that actually like?
Well, you're right, Owen. A lot of the clips were taken out of context, and they weren't. I wasn't actually at that particular debate because I left. It had been like a really freaking long week in Texas, and I was exhausted the entire time. I was at Turning Point, so I left early. But what I will say is Tucker served as an icebreaker at this event. You know, he went all in on what he was saying. He knew that it was going to be difficult. You know, everybody going into that event, like, you see people online all the time that are saying that, you know, Turning Point is just, they don't allow these voices in there that oppose Israel and such. They invited Tucker on stage, knowing what Tucker was going to talk about. I was walking around there, and Myron Gaines was there. If you know who Myron Gaines is, not exactly a friend of the government of Israel. I love to see that these people were invited and even given a microphone for 45 minutes like Tucker was. And, you know, I got a chance to talk to a lot of the staff and stuff in the background, and they were like cheering this on. They were happy. They loved the fact that Tucker was able to take the stage, say whatever he wanted to, and got the reaction he did out of the room. It was really inspiring. And I'm telling you, like, the kids that were in that room, because this was a student action summit, right? So a lot of them were like Gen Z people. And, you know, I don't think anybody there, and not even Tucker, expected the warm reception that he got to that. So I think that, you know, you're going to see a shift in the way that even organizations like Turning Point approach this stuff, because they know that's where the younger generation is going. You know, they don't take the talking points that you get from Fox News, who like force feeds boomers this, you know, like, Israel is, you know, as great as the United States sort of thing, and that you're unholy if you don't support the government of Israel. You know, that stuff is going out the window. People of the younger generation aren't buying it, and that really was reinforced this weekend. And this is going to be a turning point in the conversation.
Well, it's true. Actually, I don't know, pun not intended. It is a turning point, and I've always said this too. It really is a generational thing. And again, I'm not trying to be morbid, and I respect my elders and their wisdom and experience. But the truth is, the foreign policy ideology, and specifically the support of Israel of the boomer generation, is gone. It's gone. And you can't really sell younger generations of conservatives on this never-ending support of Israel. It's just not going to be there. I'd say it's actually deteriorating faster than I even anticipated. And the only people that are trying to prop it up are either boomers who were sold this propaganda post-World War II their whole lives, literal foreign assets, or people that have a dual loyalty, which I'm not even sitting in judgment of this. There are plenty of people that are citizens of Israel and America and even Jewish Americans, and they have a dual loyalty to Israel. Hey, that's fine. Perfectly fine. You're in a very small minority.
But you shouldn't be allowed to make decisions on behalf of our government at that point, because you're not fully loyal to the United States. This should not be controversial. You know, we're not even allowed to know who in Congress is a dual citizen, no matter what country it is. Okay, if you're pulling the purse strings and you have the authority to declare war on behalf of our country, if you're a dual citizen of a country that benefits from one side of that war or the other, then you know that's a huge problem, and nobody wants to talk about that because for whatever reason, even if you don't say what country you're talking about, you end up being labeled as an anti-Semite, and that needs to end. And I think it is ending. This is going to be a long, brutal fight. Because, you know, these people have a tendency to, cancel culture is a big part of what, let's say, the ADL and AIPAC does. So.
Yeah, well, it's becoming more obvious now than ever that the conversations are being had and that good communicators like Tucker Carlson are hitting the pressure points that cannot be defended. And you know, I think that this is going to be the problem with the selling point. Most younger generations, I believe you're in your 20s, but even me, I'm in my 30s. Most younger generations, we don't really have any feelings towards Israel at all. I was usually neutral, now pro-Israel. It's kind of like with the left-right sliding graph that Musk used to use, where he's standing in the middle, but then the left has gone so far left that he just ends up on the right. I think the same thing has happened with the Israel issues. If you're just standing neutral, well, the pro-Israel side has gone so far to the right that now you're just considered anti-Israel, but you haven't even moved. So the problem they're going to have with these younger generations like me, like you, is, you know, we didn't grow up in times like the older generations grew up in. We grew up in times where people are struggling financially. Nobody can afford a house. Nobody can afford a car. You go downtown, it's filled with crime and poverty. We're sick of hearing about foreign countries. We're sick of hearing about the plight of foreign countries. We're sick of sending never-ending aid to foreign countries while ours is collapsing all around us. Good luck selling that to younger generations that see nothing but the deterioration in front of their eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. You hit it right on the head. It's like, I don't even like talking about this issue because it has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with me as an American. None of the people that I help out there, that I go to, you know, do relief efforts there in Western North Carolina, as well as Kerrville, Texas, and the surrounding area on Maui. All of those people are Americans. Those are who I care about. That's who I want justice for. That's who I want to help, right? And until we can take care of those problems ourselves and take care of the victims of these situations and actually make our schools functional and such, we need to just, you know, stop. Like, I don't care what happens in the Middle East. And, you know, unless you have a vested interest in specific countries out there, then I don't know why you care either. And America First does not include any other country. End of story.
Nick Sortor on fire. Thank you, brother. Enjoy at least a day from traveling the world.
Appreciate it.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease. And what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things, and their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP. And it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule that should have two hydrogens on it. And like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1. It's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle. And it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue. And this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning. Next level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here. Look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm 8 to 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food. Stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.